Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast. Here with Benji, as always, on the Sunday afternoon, recapping the Men's World Championships road race. One of these a year. We're very excited. Strap in, get yourself a coffee or a cup of tea. This will be a long one with lots of tactics to discuss. As you know, this show is supported by our show partner, Lacolle. More on a record coming from Joss Loudon, supported by Lacolle, in a few days. I'll talk about that later. But the course here, we mentioned in the preview, 270Ks. We have a Leuven circuit, which is not as hard, short climbs, like 300 meters, 5, 6%. They do, I think they finish with 2.5 laps of that, but they have Flandrian circuits, which have the longer climb. But the last Flandrian circuit finishes with like 50Ks to go. It's the Smeesburg, Moskestraat, and Bergstraat, and they go back and they finish with the Smeesburg, I think, in that circuit. So that's where you'd want to make a difference, drop some of the sprinters there. Favorite, Wout van Aert. They've been talking all week about Belgium, about going happy with a sprint. Wout van Aert's the leader, and obviously we have Alaphilippe, Kasper Asgreen, a whole host of names in the world that you would expect. With Benji, it opened up really, really early. Obviously, we had the obligatory break of the smaller nations, but then, yeah, 180Ks to go, we see Cosnefroid launching it.
Yes, I think we even had an earlier move by Trugui already. So the French were really looking for that one guy to make a bit of a move and cause the group to get away and perhaps get into a beneficial position and put Alaphilippe into a seat. And I wasn't surprised that Trugui is one of those riders, but I was kind of surprised that Cosnefroid was the first one in the, the second one in that team to go for it already. And that's because, well, 2 weeks ago we saw that Cosnefroid was really strong in, what was it, the French race, Brittany Classic. So I was expecting him to be one of the latter riders to be used by that team. And next to that, also, we looked at European Championships a week and a half ago, also a strong performance there. So really surprised that he went so early. But then we saw that he makes that move. It was on the Flandrian circuit already, so one of the earlier climbs that existed. And who was following that? Well, Remco Evenepoel. And then Remco Evenepoel did so with Cort Nielsen on his wheel. Three riders gone, Cosnefroid, Evenepoel, and Cort Nielsen. So you got two riders that were literally in the last group in the European Championships, and Cort Nielsen, who's basically the Danish form of Colbrelli in some occasions. So a very similar rider in that aspect. So it was kind of fun to see this dynamic where these riders who you'd expect to go late in the race, already going with 180K to go, and that opened up the race big time. Because at the start, no imminent response. But when you look at those riders, Cosnefroid, French, Belgian, Evenepoel, Cort Nielsen, Denmark, what team isn't there? Italy mainly, from like the favorites. And that's when we saw that Italy went to the front big time. But they just had a crash with two riders of their team. Ballerini was down, Trentin was down. And those riders had just come back. Ballerini did a big pull, but after that crash, falling with his back on the bottles that he was carrying to the front of the peloton, not ideal at all, and he was gone very instantly. Then next to that, Trentin was the next to pull to get away with another rider that kept on pulling quite a bit as well. I just don't know who the third rider was. I think it was Moscon, but I'm not 100% certain. And we saw that Trentin was basically already going all out to try and close that gap as well. And that displays that the Italian team was put into a position that they seriously don't like. But it was actually getting a bit more extreme a few climbs later, two climbs later, I think, where a group actually started forming at the front of the peloton. And that group was kind of significant, but once again, did not include any Italians. It included Cosnefroid, well, obviously being caught by that group that got away from the peloton. Then Mark caught up. We had Tim de Klerk also bridging up. Primož Roglič, Tratnik, so teammate for Slovenia. We had Swift in there. Enkhorn saw that and was like, okay, there's no Dutch rider in that. I'm going to bridge up as well. Asgreen bridged to the front as well. Cort Nielsen was also there from the initial attack of Cosnefroid. So two Danish people. Erviti, Haas, Bissiger, Hulgaard, and McNulty. And when you see a group like that and you see that no Italians in there, that's a mistake, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I think Britain and Italy were caught on the back foot a fair bit today, particularly GB later as well, and they're having to do a lot of work to chase back with Stewart and co. And it cost Italy. I mean, Trentin, I thought he'd make this finish. By the time there's 124Ks left, Trentin's abandoned. Ballerini's abandoned as well. Like, I thought Trentin would be going deep into this race, and it was it was attritional. There was also crashes. We had Degenkolb caught up in the crash, Pedersen, and I think the one thing we noticed as well was MVDP, that when there were splits, seeing MVDP, he was in the, you know, in the second group, I was like, ooh, with you, and I think, is his back playing up? Does he not really have it today? And
or positioning.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Yeah, it's like it also could always be MVDP's positioning. And even when there was a lull, we would see, and no big teams took it up. George Zimmermann, for example, for Germany, who's quite strong, actually. He just made the race hard, riders like him the whole time. The only real constant was Tim de Klerk pacing. But I want to go to, I think, one of the most important parts of the race, which is this situation where Evenepoel gets into a group with Nielsen, Paulus. Who else is in this group? Andy, we should go Madua? Through the whole list. Yeah.
Madua, Evenepoel, Trotnik, Bajoli, Van Barle, Schmidt, Garcia, Cortina, Stannard, Pollet, Tilram, Paulus. But I do want to mention that in the previous group, we had de Klerk pulling, but I felt like Evenepoel was pulling more than de Klerk personally. So he has been pulling for quite a while and got into this group as well. De Klerk was not part of this group. So Evenepoel was solo when it comes to that. This time around, you have Bajoli, so in Italian, but no British rider. Britain kept on riding big time behind. Hayter had already crashed, so they were losing half their team in the same way that Italy did a bit earlier in the race. And an interesting situation, right? Evenepoel at the front, Belgium at the back, trying to kind of control the gap as well, because they not trust it?
I didn't get it, because I know you don't want that gap to get to 5 minutes, because if it's 5 minutes for Remco's mechanical or bonks, whatever, then you're stuffed. I know you want to keep it at a moderate amount, but you're approaching the Flandrian circuit. We're now between the zone 70 to 50 Ks to go is where the Flandrian circuit is. You have Remco in this group, which, being not trying to be unkind, these are not race favourites he is with. Apart from Van Baal, who I was like, you must consider him. He won Dwars Door of Vlaanderen, very underrated rider. But there is no MVDP, Pidcock, Colbrelli, Alaphilippe in this group with Remco Evenepoel. And the other teams, GB's had to spend a lot. Italy have Bagioli there, but I could see Colbrelli getting a little bit nervous. France were chasing. France were on the back foot for the first time having to chase because they weren't happy with just Madoua in this group. And Belgium have taken up the pacing, keeping the gap at 30 seconds. I would have preferred the gap to be at a minute 30, Benji, and for Belgium to make France eat up their plate a little bit more, whatever the Belgian expression is, to actually make the other teams work a little bit more. Because what's the harm? And if Wout van Aert wants to go for it, isn't this the perfect situation that you want to continue for a long time? Wout van Aert in a seat and Remco in a group that's not that threatening.
Exactly. That was also what I was thinking. When you look at the first group he was in, those were riders that were dangerous. I was scared of a Roglic in that group, despite the Paco not being the ideal Roglic Paco at all. But like, this group doesn't have that. Sure, there's riders like you mentioned, Van Baarle, that you should be scared of. But at that point, Wout van Aert is going to have to compete against big guns in the peloton as well. So he might as well risk it with Evenepoel against the likes of Van Baarle too. And I was thinking they were trying the following. I was thinking they were trying something like the Van Dijk strategy in the European Championships, keeping it close for when Remco fails to do so. But it was close, like you mentioned. It was too close. And that's because, well, I thought Remco would be the man to take on the Flandrian circuit they were going into. And if he can drop the others, then they go for Remco. If he can't drop them there, and he's not looking like he will be able to drop the likes of a Garcia Cortina, or that wasn't a likely guy to drop, to be honest, but a Van Baarle, example. Yeah, exactly.
The group thinned out. The group got reduced to a group of five with Madoua sitting on, Remco, Van Baarle, Paulus, and Bagioli. And yes, these are talented guys, but still, keeping the gap at 25 to 30 seconds, that's bridgeable. And as you said, I would have liked to see, and say Remco starts to feel not too crash hot, if he sits on with Madoua, then the group is going to come back anyway if he stops pulling. And so he will sabotage the group from within. So I think Belgium could have let that race situation play out a little bit longer. They also, in my view, I said this numerous times, I thought if you want to sprint with Wout van Aert, then you want to bring as many riders with you to the finish. Why make the Flandrian circuit hard? Why are you keeping it at 30 seconds to have Cosenfroid attacks again, by the way, with 80Ks to go or a bit later? Campenaerts has to mark that. Then Campenaerts is tied. Then they're pacing with turns. And so when Kwiatkowski actually accelerates before or at the base of the Bergstraat, there's no Belgium domestiques. It's just Wout van Aert, I think, and yes, Moskestraat. Moskestraat, maybe you're right. Yeah, but it's the two, Sturven and Wout van Aert. Kwiatkowski accelerates, and then I think Alaphilippe, or is there an attack before Alaphilippe? It's Alaphilippe, Wout van Aert on his wheel, and Alaphilippe is full launching it, creating the split, bridging across to Remco Evenepoel. And I don't know, you saw when there was just Sturven there and MVDP's coming across, who did we eventually have in this group that went across to the Evenepoel group? Because it's actually a laundry list of race favorites.
Yes, certainly a laundry list of race favorites. And for Belgium, you had Steven van Aert, and you also had Campenaerts, who was able to cling on to the back of it. And also, was Campenaerts still there? I'm not even sure.
No. Sturven, Remco.
I'm BSing people. Sorry, I'm afraid I'm messing up here. But Steven van Aert was in that group. Alaphilippe was there together with Madua, since he was bridging up towards the group with Madua, of course, since Madua was in that breakaway still. Bajoli was there with Colbrelli and Nizzolo. I'm doing this off the top of my head because I forgot to open the tab. Valgren was in there as well. We also had Van der Poel, who bridged up as one of the latest riders in the group. Yeah. Not sure if positioning are not good enough. Once again, it's very hard to guess that from Van der Poel.
I think bad legs.
I dare to think so as well, but you never know at this point. And he was able to bridge up quite late as well. Pidcock was there, lonely. Hayter already crashed and already paced quite a bit as well, I think, at that point. So didn't expect to see him anymore, and we didn't see him anymore. And who else was in that group? What nations did I forget?
Marcus Hulgaard.
Yes.
We have a laundry list of favorites because these are all fast riders, and in the group behind you have a not-looking-too-good Sagan, Michael Matthews and co. And I honestly think for Belgium, if you said, okay, 50Ks to go, you're going to have a group with a tired Remco who you're going to put on the front to work, Sturven who's already had to close a gap or two, France with three riders, Italy with three riders, and Nizzolo who's fast, MVDP with a teammate. Is that the best situation you'd want? Isn't the plan? I thought the plan for Belgium was to bring it for a 30-man sprint with a lead out for Van Aert. And, you know, then you will have the favorites as well. But instead, you are going to the finish with the favorites, just not with Turns, Benoit, Campenaerts, and co. And you know you're going to get attacked. Alaphilippe, Moritz, Valgren, Paulus. All these riders don't want to sprint.
I think the problem is the following. They indeed made it hard enough to drop sprinters, but the problem is when you make it hard enough to drop sprinters, you're also setting it up perfectly for others to attack. And then the Kwiatkowski and Alaphilippe attack came, and that probably bottled the idea of riding over the rest of that Flandrian circuit a bit slower. But the odd part is, then it doesn't make sense that they were pacing so hard before that Moskestraat with their team. And that's the only thing that doesn't click for me in that storyline. And yes, they perfectly set it up for Kwiatkowski and Alaphilippe to make that move, and that's a big risk they took there, and it ended up probably blowing up their plan of making it not that hard, because now they had two riders and Evenepoel had already half ridden himself to death in the breakaway. And by the time they came to the group with Evenepoel, by the time they were in that group, Evenepoel wasn't looking too great on the first climb that they were on. Evenepoel was hanging on a thread at the back, and He already started pacing beforehand. Honestly, respect, because he's gotten so much hate the last week about, oh, he's never going to work for Van Aert. Second that they get to the group, Remco gets at the front of the group, starts pacing. Next climb, he almost drops. After that climb, he gets back to the front and he starts pacing again. So solid work, and probably one of the two MVPs in my eyes in the Belgian team today, Evenepoel and Tim de Klerk earlier on in the race, who was also a godlike character. But yeah, from that point onwards, you're in that situation. What can you do as Belgium? Do you keep Evenepoel pacing and risk him dropping, making sure that you only have two riders to take control of attacks in the last 20K? Or do you say, don't do that and risk other people attacking you again?
I don't know. It's tough. I would have not paced with David Apollo, and I would have, it was too late at this point because they'd started pacing with him with like 52Ks to go, 50Ks to go. But I honestly would have let G2 come back. The composition of G1 was not the best it could be. Very dangerous situation. Very tough to control that final circuit. I would have let G2 come back and have more teammates and hopefully a slower race, but maybe the damage was already done at that point. And I would have put it on Italy with Bagioli to pace. And so Evenepoel paces. We have an attack from Alaphilippe again, and he actually, Colbrelli goes with him easily with 48Ks to go, but Colbrelli doesn't really pull with him. Evenepoel back to pacing. We also then have Bagioli. Then once Evenepoel stops pulling, by the way, this is now 20Ks go past of 8 or 16 of Evenepoel pulling. So it's not like, oh, he just pulled for 2Ks, he was done. No, he pulled for a long time. Bagioli pulls. So we're getting now to the point where the domestiques that are in this group are getting spent. And Valentin Madoua, France have been sitting in the entire time with Seneschal, Alaphilippe, and Madoua. And Alaphilippe attacks on the Saint-Antonius climb, led out by Madoua, who even
creates... The shortest of them all!
creates separation to the whole group, Madoua, for Alaphilippe. It's like a 150-meter climb, and no one can go with Alaphilippe. In fact, people are looking at Paulus to do it. Well, people were looking at Van Aert, and actually Paulus, to his own detriment, did it, tried to do it, and no one could go with him. And then we have Alaphilippe getting onto the circuit. Now's the second curious thing, Benji, which makes sense with the post-race interviews. We see Van Aert lets Stuyven's wheel go, and he, I think, goes with a small group. And you're like, why is Wout Van Aert letting Stuyven go? Because then the rest of the group looks at Van Aert to close Stuyven. So, like, was that explained in the post-race interviews?
Well, in the post-race interviews, I'm afraid that Van Aert just went with... I didn't have the legs I wanted today, and I told Stuyven that, and he tried for himself. So I'm guessing that must have happened just before this move. Otherwise, Van Aert should have been the rider to respond to in the wheel of Stuyven, because you can't let that group go with Alaphilippe already ahead of that, because Stuyven is unlikely to get back to Alaphilippe and beat him afterwards. I just don't see that happening unless Stuyven suddenly has a godlike day, which I wasn't really expecting. And I didn't get that, but he got lucky. He got to the back of the group, Van Aert, and we saw that group that was split behind got back because the likes of Van der Poel also closed down the gap again. So we had a full, complete chase again behind Alaphilippe, and then there was this tiny second where Alaphilippe was riding ahead of them, and Stuyven decides to attack on the right side of the road. People attack with him. I'm not sure if there's one rider that attacked just before Stuyven. I honestly am not really sure, but they formed a chasing group with Valgren, Van Baarle, Stuyven, and someone else. Paulus, yes. So, Valgren and Paulus, great teammates. Yeah. Did you think that had any effect on their riding style after that?
No, because they all just attacked each other.
The only one who didn't was Paulus in my eyes. I felt like he kept on riding whenever the tempo went down.
I agree. I think Stuyven actually kind of played a bit coy for second. I didn't see Stuyven rolling through as much as Paulus or Van Baarle. We saw in the Tour de France, we see it so often, a rider gets a 10, 12 second gap. Alaphilippe's got to do the full Leuven circuit. You think, how is he going to do 12Ks, 14Ks on his own against a group of Van Baarle, Paulus, Stuyven, and Valgren, four strong riders? And the answer is everyone's cooked. G3 is gone. They got Nizzolo pacing backwards. They're at like 45 seconds. Pidcock's missed the split. He'd been sitting in the whole time and apparently actually had quite good legs. So he miscalculated there following Van Aert and MVDP, I think. And the group just starts bleeding time to Alaphilippe on each of these short climbs. Alaphilippe seemed to power up them. He took a lot of risks on the descent, full gas down them as well. And then there was, once it gets to 20 seconds, 25 seconds, silver medal fight starts to happen. And then it's done 100%. And it gets to 3Ks to go, 30 seconds. And we know Alaphilippe has sewn up the world champs for a second year in a row. He's celebrating. The crowd, someone threw beer at him, I think, in the finishing straight. And he wins easily in this World Championships road racing.
Yeah, and it's solo, so he couldn't get DQ'd afterwards, which is always great. Exactly.
It was a bit deflating. I was hoping for a reduced bunch sprint amongst some of the biggest names we have in cycling, because I just don't know who would have won at the end of this six-hour race. But yeah, Alaphilippe, 17-18K solo, 32 seconds ahead of Van Baal, who takes a well-deserved second. Valgren, he's been in the wilderness for a few years now, third at World Champs buff. Sturven misses out, fourth. Paulus, fifth. Paulus deserved a medal, in my view, incredibly strong. Pidcock tried to bridge across too late, sixth. Then Stibar, Van der Poel, Seneschal, Colbrelli, Van Aert, 11th. As I said, I want to mention, Lacolle are supporting Jos Loudon going for the Women's World Hour record attempt. It's on the 30th of September, 5 p.m. Central European Time, 4 p.m. British Standard Time. It'll actually be broadcast on Eurosport and Eurosport Player, GCN Plus, and on Lacolle's YouTube channel. Jos Loudon obviously rides for Drops Lacolle, the team that Lacolle support and sponsor. And yeah, she was incredibly strong actually on the front for Great Britain. You might have seen in the World Championships road race for Dagenham Henderson the other day. So she has to break 48.008 kilometers. And yeah, I can't wait to watch to see if she can do it on the 30th of September. So thanks to Lacolle for supporting the podcast, for supporting women's cycling, and hopefully see as many of you watching that and enjoying it then. So France, Benji, tactical perfection, making the race incredibly hard and attacking at every opportunity throughout the race with Cosnefroid and then Alaphilippe and Tergis and Madouar, getting in all the right moves, and then also having Seneschal as a threat in that late move too. I think, yeah, hats off to Alaphilippe. They played it perfectly, even though Verkler says that wasn't the plan.
Well, I guess they can be happy with the not plan as well then, I guess, because this was hella great. And like, we have some positives for the Belgian team as well. We got to look at this and we see that Van Aert doesn't get silver, so that's a win. And next to that, Remco has his teammate in the World Champs jersey. So technically, his pacing in the group also helped Alaphilippe get his World Champs jersey, and he can just pretend that it was for that reason and get credit in the De Koenig team as a consequence. So yeah, all in all, I think that Belgium made tactical mistakes. I think that they could have played it much better at certain occasions, like the Evenepoel moment where Evenepoel was in that five-man group and they chose to basically ride 20 seconds of it just before the Moskva Strat, launching Kwiatkowski and so forth. And additionally, I also didn't like what they did at the start. Sure, yes, they made that group. Evenepoel was in that group, but then Van Aert puts himself with three teammates at the front of the peloton, blocking the road. Just a complete road. Ah,
yeah.
Fuck off, man.
Least favorite thing. I think Remco was too active at the start in the Cosnefroid role. I think you said tactical. I think there's an overall philosophical problem, which I mentioned in the preview, which is Belgium were treating Van Aert like the reincarnation of Pete Bono. They were. No, they're like, it's going to be a sprint. Wout gets to pick the team, you know, and they were going to ride for Wout. And it's like, that's great. Wout is very good. He's good in bunch sprints and reduced bunch sprints. I wouldn't say he is a nailed-on winner of them. I wouldn't say he consistently wins classics races, particularly ones like this. But it's certainly worthy of being race favourite. Does that mean that Evenepoel should 100% sacrifice his chances, or you should chase down Evenepoel when he's in a group of riders who are not race favourites or pursue that so aggressively? I think no. I think that's my bigger problem, and I think the philosophy of no, it's Wout, it's all about Wout, I think it played into it. And I think, yeah, I think Remco is very strong today. Even Sturven, it's like Denmark had an open team, right? Valgren was the strongest. Valgren goes in the group, etc. Sturven was really strong today. What if Van Aert was pacing to keep Sturven together? Probably would have lost the sprint. But the point is, Benji, like, anyone can have bad legs. I think pinning it when you have Evenepoel like they did, yeah, I just don't understand it. Maybe we'll hear more about it. But what is for sure, Benji, is, do you think the criticism of Evenepoel's selfish teammate, that's done now, right?
Yes, certainly. But we also can't hype him up too much. We still got to remember that he killed a pheasant last year in Lombardia. So that's not that's not nice either.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens next year. Obviously, Caleb Ewan taking the dub in Wollongong.
In all honesty, we've said it for weeks that this would be the case, that they're focusing too much on Van Aert as a solo leader. I think I've made that clear like for a month on this podcast. And to see it in action and see that they fold into that completely, and it basically has a consequence that they chase Evenepoel at that certain point, it just annoys a bit, because we could have seen it coming. And that's always annoying, that you could see seen something coming and they didn't think about it, that situation, that Van Aert wasn't the strongest today. Remco was stronger than Van Aert today. It's as simple as that. And I don't know. I do think that if Evenepoel ends up in a situation with Alaphilippe in the same group, Alaphilippe wins this world championships, yep, hands down. But in the situation that he was in with five riders in that group, Belgium could have just let, I don't know, Kwiatkowski and the French try and close the gap, because sure, they might have been able to do so, but still it would have been harder, because they closed down 20 seconds to the front group just before the Moscow throughout the Belgians. So,
well, here's a different scenario, Benji. The gap's at 1 minute. Alaphilippe attacks while Van Aert sits on. Alaphilippe's having to bridge on a flatter section with Van Aert.
Yeah, he gets angry, Alaphilippe.
Yeah, and he's on the flat.
He always does too.
If he's having to do a 20-minute bridge on the flat with Van Aert in the wheel, that's very different than what happened, which is, yeah, an easier snap bridge. But maybe, anyway, we're pontificating a lot. I obviously thought, I joked about this in my Discord about, I thought the best team for Belgium was to bring the team that keeps, the Belgians that keep winning all these races, which is Alpes and Phoenix, and just bring the entire Alpes and Phoenix roster. Philipsen won, by the way, Paris-Shawnee, literally a minute after the World Championships. But, yeah, it's obviously ludicrous. I don't know. It is funny to me that all they were saying, Belgium, was we want to go to a big sprint. Then they got a group of 15 and they're like, we're going to keep this group of 15 together. It just seems like something went wrong there. But other names to pick out, let's not focus on Belgium.
Hulgaard, come on.
Yeah.
Attention for Hulgaard, man.
Great rider.
Not normal. Like, he's been riding for Eggs this year still, and I think next year was Trek, that yep, a transfer that he's at. He's finishing this race 12th, which is not a top 10, but still, his European champs was also a top 10. His Arctic race of Norway stage win, I think, if I recall correctly. Yes, that's not a big race, but I recall him from the start of the season. I think it was Omloop, no, Kuurne-Brussel-Kuurne, 14th, E3, 8th. Amstel Gold Race, 19th. He's so versatile. He's the kind of rider that he could top 15, top 10, perhaps in the peak of his career, 4 of the 5 monuments, something like that.
I think Milano Sanremo is something he definitely can focus on. If you look at that Arctic race, obviously different level, but it was like a late climb. Then he just absolutely murdered this descent and dropped Leknesund and then had the power to stay away. MSR fits him.
Lombardia is the one that doesn't fit him of the five in my eyes.
Too much. And I think Liège also too hard, personally. Otherwise, Nizzolo, very strong to get into that group. Colbrelli, I think Colbrelli had good legs, but then he followed Alaphilippe. Early moves, okay. I think Paulus is the big surprise to me in that top five, Benji, and it really could have been a top three. Nielsen Paulus, 25 years old, won Clásica San Sebastián. EF extended him. He's out till 2024 there. Just an incredible ride from him. The race, one must admit, it suited him in the way the French set it up. Seemed perfect. But, yeah, I think Liège next year, surely if he's like this, he should be competitive at Liège now for EF next year.
I believe so as well. I just don't know if the finish, the flat finish in Liège fits him these days.
I think he's decently fast.
Yeah, we saw that San Sebastian in that sprint, right? Then again, he was almost beaten by Honoré, who just rode into a wall. But still, it just shows that that race wasn't a one-off. And that's already fun to see with the likes of a Bettiol, who, for example, had his RVV. But then in the other one-day big races, he was never really the outstanding rider that competed for the win in my eyes anymore. Perhaps that 1E3. But I feel like Paulus is proving that he's more than a one-trick pony, and I love that, because then we can see him in a lot of races in the future. And Madua, you mentioned that lead out for Alaphilippe, also an iconic moment in the race. The gap that he made on the others is just insane, and nobody really responded, but I think it's because they couldn't.
Simple
as that.
The only one that seemed to was Paulus, who wasn't on Alaphilippe's wheel at the time. And then once the separation, it's too late.
And Van Aert bottled his position completely on the climb as well. He was sitting in seventh position, like behind like most of the riders in that group. Third last position in the group together with Stuyven next to him. I don't know why, because you know that Alaphilippe is going to try and attack on the hills. You need to be at the front of that group and not at the back when you go onto a climb like that. And that's a mistake, quite clear as day. And it proved to be quite a mistake, because that was the first move by Alaphilippe, and he was closing that with a lot of difficulty, that's for certain.
What do you think now for Alaphilippe, Benji? Do you think he's second year in a row as world champion? I must say, not my favorite rider in the peloton. I think he's one of the dirtiest riders in the peloton. The way he rides, bunch sprints, bunch sprints, frankly. And if he had a different name or was a different rider, he would have probably had a well-earned suspension at some point. But that being said, I mean, Liège last year, not a great moment. I think you laughed, Benji, when Mike Wood said the other day, you know, after he'd been a great world champion. It's like, didn't he 2 weeks after getting it on his shoulders chop
the issue? Yeah, sorry, but the tweet by Woods was, he's one of the most entertaining world champions. Mate, have you seen Sagan's years as world champion in the early days? That was more impressive in my eyes. But Alaphilippe did attack a lot. I do value him a lot in that aspect.
Stage he attacks one TDF.
At, not even at the most clever moments in some races. I think in Omloop, he was attacking with 50, 60K to go at a certain point, or was that some other race?
He worked for Ballerini.
Nude was in the last 10-ish kilometer. Yeah, you're right. He was putting up Ballerini in the seat. That's perfectly right. But that's interesting, because you would dare to say that he was definitely co-leader at that team at that race. And he folds into a position to just make the race. I think in the early days, we had Tour La Provence, was it?
Yeah, did the same thing for Ballerini there on stage one, following Moscon move. So he can ride for, and he climbed well at Provence as well. It's just, it's funny. Yeah, he has these incredibly high peaks where he wins Flèche with a record time chasing down Roglic. He second at Liège, and then Tour de Suisse was good as well, frankly. And then stage one TDF blows MVDP out of the water to take the yellow jersey on the stage I thought suited MVDP. And then on Britannia, almost gets caught napping and gets I couldn't believe he lost the yellow jersey there. And the San Sebastian Britannia Classic coming back, I guess, yeah, a little bit, still second in Britannia, but he got beaten by Cosnefroid there. And he's entertaining, attacks a lot. I just don't care too much for the way he rides sometimes in bunch sprints.
We like underestimate Stibar? Because I feel like I would never have called him before the race for this race, but in hindsight, this parkour fits him so well. Like, how did I not name him for at least the top 10 in this race?
Yeah, I mean, seventh at Primus Classic, seemed to be tuning up well. He came fifth in E3 this year. Wow, I did not realize that. It's crazy. That was with Quickstep, had three of the top five at E3, Harald Becker, and he's 35 years old. Presumably extended next year, but yeah, he's. I can't wait for Paris-Roubaix, Benji, because he's got the experience, you know, he's got the experience and he's looking good. I've got the highlight rights for men and women, first women's ever edition next weekend at Paris-Roubaix. Nice. We'll have podcasts. We'll do a podcast preview because it's a monument as well for the men and women's. I
forgot about that.
Who do you like for Roubaix, judging from their shape here?
Ooh, well, let me take a quick look at the top 10 again. I feel like Van Baarle is definitely one that I expect to be in the elite candidates at the end, because he's also been close in the past in Roubaix, and he's the kind of rider that really is good on these longer races, these 250 plus kilometer races that really fits him. In all honesty, it wouldn't surprise me if Valgren's good on that parkour as well. Sure, he's honestly better on the hills, but I do believe that he's decent on cobbles as well. Stuyven's definitely one that I would name. I would not expect Paulus to be the perfect candidate for Roubaix, but he's welcome to surprise me. I doubt he's going to ride it though. Pidcock, I don't know. It should fit him, right? As a cyclocrosser, the parkour. Oh yeah, he was skipping it for a certain reason that I completely forgot.
But I like Stuyven. Stuyven and Seneschal looking good for it, I think.
You think Van der Poel will grow into form by then?
Who knows? I mean, if there's one race when you've got a lingering back issue, you don't want to do it. It's probably 6 hours. Fuck me, Paris-Roubaix. I couldn't think of anything worse. I've got a sore back myself right now. Jesus. But yeah, what about, let's round up the the parkour a little bit, Benji. We've now seen all the races across the week of this World Championships. Very exciting week. TT, I enjoyed a lot. We always thought this course for the men elite could be selective enough, and we thought there'd be a solo. I just thought it'd be Remco. What do you think of the parkour? I think it was outstanding. I think it was perfect. It was very well balanced, and judging by how exciting this men's road race was, I think they couldn't have done a better job.
I think so as well. First of all, it doesn't feel iconic for Belgium, this parkour. Just like for the Flemish region, I think about Cobble Classics, and this was an opportunity to get Cobble into the World Championships, and they didn't do that. They went for a reduced parkour with less cobbly surroundings, and yeah, I don't know if that would have made a big difference when it comes to the winner, because Alaphilippe would fit on that terrain as well, but I still believe that it would have been more iconic for Belgium. Was Leuven a good place? It was a very technical parkour, and it caused a lot of crashes as a consequence. It could also be the combination of the nervousness with a criterium-like circuit in Leuven, but I still feel like you can see a kilometer banner across the road, and the right side is like bulging into the road, so the riders have to like go to the left and then to the right again just after that kilometer banner. Well, you know that that some rider is going to hit that, and then you've got another rider that almost hit one of those parts where they go into a corner and they have to go wide, but then the road kicks in and becomes narrow, and he almost rides into that as well. So the safety of this parkour was not up to standards in my eyes to a World Championships parkour. And the barriers along the side, there were quite a few crashes that were caused by barriers with those iron legs at the bottom that they said that they would never used properly in the sport anymore, and then they kept on using it. So that's not amazing either. I'm not a great fan of this parkour, and I'm not sure what it is. It was very fun to see the races, but it's not like I will remember this as, oh, it was the Flemish parkour. The only thing that was great about it was the people at the parkour, because some of the images that I saw, the videos that I saw from Leuven, that was amazing. And that's mainly due to the people and not necessarily the parkour.
Yeah, I think, as you said, you know, there's no Van Heraldsbergen. There's no iconic cobble climb.
They didn't go through Gistel, the capital of Belgium.
I think they were trying to home cook a parkour for Wout van Aert. I thought that was the plan. Problem is that suits some other riders, I think. Yeah.
Apparently.
But yeah, I enjoyed watching it. I enjoyed how there was a possibility for a group sprint of 5, of 20, of solo attacks like Baroncini, of 2 like Zoe Backstep, and now Alaphilippe solo. And then who won the under 23s men's, Benji? Can't remember.
He won the juniors.
So it did suit attackers a little bit more, I think.
Jesus.
It was more attritional than we thought.
Baroncini, of course, dude.
Baroncini. And the women elite was a large sprint with obviously the upset there with Balsama. But yeah, I enjoyed watching all the races. And I think you can, I don't know, would you have preferred swapping the Flandrian and Leuven circuits around? I think it would have mean the action would have been delayed until the last 10-15 Ks.
I'm afraid so as well. I think that's what a lot of the World Championships do, and why they don't put a big climb at the end of a World Championships very often as well. You don't have a monster finish with like a 25-kilometer climb at the finish, because the riders would wait until the climb starts and do action on the climb itself. You know that would happen. And I think they try and make the parkour to cause early action. And in all honesty, we can't say that we didn't have an entertaining race today, because it started with 180K to go, and it's a dream of a cycling fan for that to happen. And that's also thanks to the riders. If we don't have Cosnefroy and Turgui and Evenepoel and Magnus Cort Nielsen willing to do that, and Asgreen on the first, was it Moskestrad or Blekestrad when he went ham and tried to drop the entire front group at 160K to go for no reason at all? Well, that makes the race, and that makes it fun, and thanks to the riders.
Really enjoyed it. Great World Championships. Cannot wait for Paris-Roubaix next weekend. As I said, we'll have previews.
Next year? Wollongong.
next year, Wollongong. Hopefully, I'll be allowed back in Australia and then allowed to leave. By then, hopefully, Australia's able to let that World Championships happen, not holding my breath for the Tour Down Under in January at the moment. But yeah, Wollongong, it better be pancake flat for Caleb. If we're going to be home cooking, of course.
Wollongong Hill for Port, and then realizing that Roglic is perfect for that.
You know that Wollongong Hill is nowhere near Wollongong, Benji. It's literally like the distance probably of like Moscow to London. So far away. Oh. Anyway, that's what happens when Europeans turn up in Australia. But like, the cities are not that far apart.
Have you ever had like in a race where there's suddenly we have cows in French races? Do you have kangaroos in Australian races?
On like the ascent of some of the South Australian climbs that you see in the TDU, yeah, if you go at dusk, you can have a kangaroo, like on Norton Summit, a kangaroo can jump across the road and they get freaked out. So, yeah, that can happen. But in big races with lots of people making noise during the day, less likely. But we're getting a little bit off track here. Make sure you give us a review or a rating if you're listening on podcast players, or like on YouTube if that's what you're watching, and get us to 20,000 subscribers. As I said, we've got a 20K sub Q&A on YouTube coming up. It'll be on podcast players as well, but we've got to get to that milestone first. I think that's all the housekeeping out of the way. Hope you all enjoyed the World Championships. We certainly enjoyed it as well. I think we'll be going in person next year as well. Benji's going to have to pack his little rucksack, get his way over to Australia if they let him in, and we'll see you then. Obviously, we'll have other pods before then. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.